Welcome to Voice of the Cape Drive Time. Yes, indeed, it is time for Weekly Africa Report. In this week's report, we look at the following. South African private army accused of atrocities in Mozambique. Zimbabwe's second vice president resigns over sexual misconduct. And Nigeria grapples with school kidnappings by armed groups. Online for comment is Executive Director, Democracy Development Program at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, Dr. Paul Kariuki. Twitter handle, at K-A-Y-L-A-N-P-K. That's how you can get hold of Dr. Paul Kariuki. Dr. Kariuki, welcome.
Thank you so much, Shafiq, for having me on the show, and good afternoon to your listeners.
South African private army accused of atrocities in Mozambique. We've just finished doing a story about Open Secrets, revealing that South Africa sold 11 billion rands worth of arms to people fighting in Yemen. And now we have bad news out of Mozambique. I think the company's called DAG, accused of killing civilians, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, unfortunately it's not a good story to tell, because of the connotation it brings as far as looking after citizenry, the Mozambicans in this case, and from a human rights approach point of view. And unfortunately, it borders within the challenging diplomatic relationships that South Africa has had with Mozambique for quite some time. And the involvement of the South African private military company in the affairs of another sovereign country is disastrous, to say the least, in terms of reputation of the nation. So it's a very sad story, especially because of the human catastrophe involved.
I mean these are war crimes. The Amnesty International report says the mercenaries from DAG, Dyke Advisory Group, the funny thing is it lost a number of battles, but they fired guns from helicopters, dropped hand grenades from helicopters, and hand grenades indiscriminately into crowds. I mean, this is just beggar's belief, doesn't it?
Definitely, and that is the human catastrophe that saddens anyone because of such results. And you will not expect at any time any military intervention to be so insensitive to human lives to that extent, and at the same time also having been associated with a country such as South Africa that is known to uphold the rule of law and observe human rights. So there's a lot of questions going on there, and of course the company DAG has decided to go to pursue a legal route to really go to the bottom of this because of the Amnesty International's report. But the bottom line is that human lives have been affected, and at the same time, there is a cloud of doubt of to the extent they were involved and how they were involved, and why they did do such kind of warlike scenarios in the country that has its own sovereign will. And what did the citizens do to be exposed to such levels of atrocities? So there's so many questions that needs to be answered, and of course be impacted to the extent of why they had to use such excessive force, even if it's to assist the Mozambican government to fight the insurgencies.
I mean, what's happening there is private citizens who are being screwed by the government on the issue of oil exploration. They're losing their land because of that. Then there is an ongoing war by an opposition group claiming to be an Islamic one. I doubt that. And then you've also got the Mozambican military, and then you've got DAG, all three parties committing atrocities on not each other, but on the civilians. It really is a sorry, sorry state of affairs.
And that really, Shafiq, that was complicated the story. Why would such combined forces, really do attack defenseless civilians? That's one of the big questions that such, if the legal route is really explored to the fullest, I'm sure it would be in the interest of the public and of the region to really understand why did the three forces did attack defenseless civilians to this extent. And I hope that the judicial process will be fair to the extent that it will be able to get to the bottom of this situation and really do provide answers to a great extent. And I'm sure probably the Mozambican government is also interested. I've not come across any response from them yet, except for the denial that they were also not aware. But it's very hard to believe that they weren't aware when the number of people involved who passed on because of the attacks is out there in the public domain.
Yeah, I mean, it's horrible things that are happening. The rebel group, which does have socioeconomic grievances, which are genuine, but it certainly doesn't justify the violence that they've stooped to. The locals call them head choppers. There's an expression in Portuguese which says, like, chopping a cow in half is how they describe that group. Then you've got Mozambican forces. I'm sure you know the incident last September. Beat a naked woman with a stick, shot her 36 times, left her body in the highway. Killings, security forces taking women to be raped. And then you've got DAG shooting people from helicopters and apparently even shooting on a school. The international community has to wake up, doesn't it?
I agree with you 100%. And I think that partly this is why Amnesty International took upon themselves to really go and fish out this information, to put this report together that has now been put in the public domain, that I hope it will awaken interest, especially from the region, the SADC region itself, the leadership of the SADC region countries, to be able to hold their counterpart accountable for this. But also the United Nations and the African Union also to get involved. It's almost unimaginable to think that a country can turn on its own citizens and be part of such level of atrocity. So I think the report does well by firstly exposing the issue to the extent that it has done. But the second part of it is to hopefully that the regional body, SADC, the African Union, will be interested in finding out exactly the details of why this situation went to the extent it went to, and of course hold their counterparts accountable for the things that have happened in the country.
Do you think part of the problem is when you try and corporatize a political struggle, I'll put it that way, you're going to have problems? I think a prime example is Iraq. I mean, Iraq was basically corporatized by the U.S. For every U.S. soldier on the ground, there were 9 civilians in various roles. I'm not saying Mozambique is exactly the same, but it does seem as if the Mozambican government, yes, it sent its army there, but it's almost happy to try and have a corporate resolution to what is a very serious political problem.
I agree. In most cases, when we have private intervention on political squabbles, there is always ordinary citizens are actually the casualty because their interests are not protected in that case. And therefore, there's no one prompting the intervention to be in favor or in the interest of civilians. In this case, you have private enterprises coming into such a struggle. Of course, one begs to find out what was given in exchange for their intervention or for their participation. And this is where corporatization of private military becomes a problematic in peace and conflict resolution situations such as what was going on in Mozambique. And therefore, it begs the question, who is benefiting out of the violence? And to what extent was the government involved to the extent that they could be able to sign on the dotted line, if I'm assuming, for these private security forces to be involved in an internal matter that should have been solved even to a great extent politically, because it's unfathomable that a private military will be involved in a country that already has its own military to defend its people. So it's really highly undesirable that private military intervention should be involved in national political struggles.
Yeah, I think the oil companies need to answer some awkward questions. Let's move on to another issue. I'm not too sure whether this is comedy, politics, or what. Zimbabwean Vice President Kembo Mahadi, and he's been around the block and then some. He's not a threat to President Emmerson Mnangagwa, but he has resigned due to alleged sex scandals. But he's got a real swing of phrase, and I think it's more his language that's getting attention more than anything else. I'm just going to quickly give some quotes from his resignation letter, which is going to go down as a classic. He says he was a victim of information distortion, voice cloning, and sponsored spooking and political sabotage. And after going through a soul-searching pilgrimage, he needed space to deal with my problems outside the governance chair. Lovely swing of English language, eccentric, but certainly entertaining.
It is. And on one part, it shows that there is some level of shifting now in the political landscape to an extent that a senior member of government, such as the vice president, would willingly step aside to focus on these issues that, you know, have come very much close to cause of disrepute to the government itself, but also for other cabinet colleagues that, you know, the vice president is part of. However, the extent of denialism there, again, is also worrying, because although these matters are still, at this stage, alleged issues, but I don't think it would have gone to the extent of him stepping down if there was no element of some truth in what is coming as allegations. So the bottom line is, I think he did himself a good thing to step aside in saving only his own little integrity that has been left, but also saving the integrity of the government to be seen as a government that, at least on the very least, understands the importance of ethical leadership.
I mean, he seems to have a real reputation. Local media alleging that he had affairs with both married and single women. And a phone call, I think that's actually what bust him, when he propositions woman and speaks of drinking concoctions to improve his performance. So it looks like he got basically caught out there, and it seems like he just has no more room to move. He's got to go.
Definitely. He was actually, it's very hard for him to get himself out of that wrangle. But in elevating the action to the level of saying that, you know, the moral stance needs to be protected, especially when it comes to leaders who have, you know, great influence in the public. When they're caught in situations like this and others, they need to really do the right thing, which is actually step aside and allow, you know, whatever forces of law that need to be employed to get to the truth, so that at least it can send a message to the rest of the leadership, on not only in that country but around the continent, that we cannot continue to build a democracy on fragile ethical leadership. And for me, I think that's the biggest statement that he's stepping aside really sending. And it takes a lot of courage, of course, to be able to say, you know what, these things may be still be allegations, but I'm willing to step aside to sort them out, and in the meantime, allow government to function in the sense that it does not diminish the public's confidence and trust in what is remaining in government at the moment. We know that the nation has faced so many challenges over the years and still does face them. But when we get small instances of this kind of, you know, action to say, I acknowledge the damage this has on my personality, my leadership, and also for the government that I represent, I choose to willingly to step aside, even though the denialism says I'm not accepting, I'm not saying I did these things, but I'm willing to step aside, is a little step towards in the right direction. And hopefully other leaders who have been caught in situations that really do interfere with public trust and confidence in government will take a leaf from this act.
Absolutely. And our final story, we got 2 minutes on this one. Nigeria grapples with school kidnappings by armed groups, this time round, not Boko Haram, but reports coming out of Nigeria telling us that these were criminal gangs looking for extortion money. This kidnapping thing is really getting out of hand, isn't it? It happens a lot in South Africa to businessmen in our community, and it looks like it's happening to whole classrooms full of girls in Nigeria.
It is very hard to break in, Shafiq, because of especially the fact that it involves children who are innocent, who have to face this kind of very heartbreaking, traumatizing situations for doing literally nothing. They're just victims. The situation has continued unabated in Nigeria for a long time, and it's also begging questions about to what extent is government decisive to really bring these things to an end. Reports coming from the different media houses and reports from the country indicate there was some form of ransom have been paid in previous acts of kidnapping, and therefore there could be an incentive that is going around to this kind of bandits and such people who cause this kind of terrors to think that they can extort money from government when they do things like this. So there's a lot of questions around what's the contribution of government to this story at this point in time.
Sad, sad stories. We have to leave it there. Dr. Paul Kariuki, Executive Director, Democracy Development Program at the University of KwaZulu-Natal. You can use Twitter handle is at KAYLANPK. That's where you can go get hold of Dr. Paul Kariuki. Thanks for joining us on Weekly Africa Report.
Thank you, Sir Shafiq, for having me on the show, and I wish you well.
Thank you.
The Weekly African Report in Drive Time.
This morning started off with a fog, some mist, which is telling us in a subtle way that, yes.
I think...